Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Good morning. So it's John Williams visited with Bob Surratt, you know, Ron Howard's friend a little while ago. Dave Ennett is in the studio, too. I'm here weekdays from 9 to noon and on social media, WGN King John. I'm just a little jealous. I mean, I tweet, and Ron Howard sure hasn't tweeted back at me.
Well, he tweeted. So have you tweeted at Ron Howard?
I have not tweeted at Ron
Howard. Well, maybe then he would. Retweet
you. I'm going to tweet at him right now.
Well, you got to have something to say.
Well, I'll say, hey.
Did you see the Pavarotti show?
No, but how does he know?
Okay.
I'll tweet something. Okay, Elif, let's just remember after the show or during the show, let's tweet something at Ron Howard. Like, hey, Ron Howard, you're awesome. And P.S., I know at Bob Surratt. And then see if he'll, blow me up on the interwebs.
He made me feel so bad. I mean, I really didn't mean to
almost
in any way pop
Surratt's
balloon.
He's going, man, it's so awesome. Ron Howard tweeted back at me, and then there's this pause. Well, maybe his people did that.
Maybe his people did. That's all I said.
But he said it jokingly. It was kind of humorous.
Actually, it made me think, I really wonder if... I wondered this about the president, too. Any famous person, you just want to see them in the moment, reading and then tweeting or retweeting. So maybe Ron Howard was literally sitting there in his palatial Ron Howard house, and he goes, "Huh, well, that's a nice thing," and then tweets back at Bob Surratt.
I think he did.
Because I thought maybe it was one of those automated bounce-back things where, you know, anytime Pavarotti and at comes up, then it automatically says, "Hey, thanks for listening," you know. It's sort of like those out-of-office text messages or email you get saying, I'm on vacation until Thursday. If anything comes up, contact Mary. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. But who knows? So I'll tweet at him and see what kind of response we get. You know, yesterday at this time, we were talking a little bit about those. It's just not fair to call it OCD because that's a real thing. Some people have it, and it really hampers their life. But what is your OCD-like symptom, that thing that kind of follows you throughout your life? And we just got so many text messages, and I'm not going to go way back into that today, but I just wanted to read to you a couple of other texts that came in afterwards. None of them are from Ron Howard. This one says, John, I always take 3 napkins, whether it be at home, a restaurant, etc., something I've been doing since college. I'm not sure why. John, when I mow the lawn, the tracks left by the mower must always be perfectly straight and even spaced. I'm a little like that, too, just because I take pride when I had a lawn and mowing it. John, I'm a firefighter, and we live in our rigs. This is a different topic. John, I share many of these OCD traits that your listeners are sharing, but a big one of mine is having all of the coats in the closet facing the same direction. Yes, my wife hangs hers up with the opening to the right, when clearly it should be facing to the left. John, the volume of the radio in my car has to be an even number, but the volume on the TV remote has to be divisible by 5. It's a really big bus here at WGN, and we got room for you all. Those OCD-like tendencies some of you carry, John, I hate to hear the word jaguar pronounced jaguar. Really bothers me. John, no one has mentioned the toilet paper direction. By the way, it should roll off the front. Many of you texted that after yesterday's show. Oh my God, John, this is me all my life. I'm so glad to hear I'm not alone with these things. 608 said, I travel a lot for work, and I must always have a bottle of V8 juice in the hotel room. I don't know why. I love V8, but often I don't drink it and just throw it away. 619, I have trifold towels, and my wife can't seem to do it right. Done all my hangers, John, all my hangers have to face the same way over the rod, and the clothing has to open in the same direction. Somebody else said, I can't stand it when I see a crooked picture. Even in the doctor's office, I will straighten it out. I think that's a tell. If you go into somebody's office and the pictures are all askew, you think, maybe their surgery isn't real hot here either. You know, you just think it's attention to detail. They say the one way to tell if a restaurant is a good restaurant is to go into the bathroom. If they pay attention to that detail, then they're probably paying attention to the more important details or as important details in the kitchen. I mean, it's just a tell. John, I keep copious lists on paper and on my phone. If I complete a task that's not on either list, after I completed the task, I'll go put it on my list and then I check it off. I've done that before, too. It's nothing happier than the moment where you cross something off your to-do list. What if you do something and it's not on the list? This person will then write it down and then cross it off. John, it drives me crazy when I see parents giving their kids pop. It's carbonated poison. John, I'm a receipt gal. I have receipts dating back to the year 2000. And the list goes on. So if you're relating to any of these, know that you're not alone. John, when I eat a sandwich, I have to eat the smallest half first. I don't know why, but I have to. The president spoke to the nation with a bunch of officials last night about the coronavirus, along with some health department officials. They emphasized the inevitability of it. The president emphasized his optimism about it. And also, Ryan Burrow is in Milwaukee this morning. You've been hearing his reports here on WGN Radio. And he joins us now just to kind of give us an update on what little we know so far, Ryan. Is it unusual that officials have been this close with the details?
You know, they're taking their time, John, and it's interesting. I've driven around the campus here, the Miller Coors / Molson Coors campus. Miller Valley is what they call it, and really, there's no indication as to what happened other than the fact that it's fairly empty. Employees here have been told that there will be no production, there will be no office work through the end of the week, so they can cope with what happened. Six employees here dead, one of them the gunman who apparently took his own life. That's what police discovered when they first arrived here. We don't know if these five employees or co-workers were targeted, if they just so happened to have been in the wrong place right as this shooting spree started. It's unclear at this point. But, you know, it's interesting, John, as you speak to me, there's a man with some roses. He's walking up now to the entrance, and it looks like he's going to put them at the front. This is the first person we've seen that's done that, and of course the media is surrounding him. It's a sad scene, but on the other hand, too, you know, we don't really have much to work off of, and so when you see someone from the community come and pay their respects, you know, it's newsworthy.
My understanding is the officials, the cops came upon the gunman first, so there was not an exchange of gunfire between the police and the gunman. They came upon the scene with the victims already shot, right?
That's our understanding. Now, a timeline has not really been set for us, and we're hoping to get a little bit more information. But according to Chief Alfonso Morales, who yesterday spoke, said they received that call, and when they arrived, they discovered that 51-year-old employee with the self-inflicted gunshot wound. And as they continued to scour the building, they came across these five victims. Every one of those victims died of their gunshot wounds. There was no one who was rushed to a hospital with injuries, at least our understanding.
Right. No other injuries. That is, each person that was shot fatally. There were no other injuries. We don't have a tick-tock of this event, what happened step by step, what the motive was. We don't know why those individuals were shot. Were they targeted or were they in the wrong place at the wrong time? In fact, I don't think we even know, Ryan, do we, if this, well, we do know this employee had been let go, right? Had been fired?
That is what we were initially told. Police have not walked that back, but they're not giving us a lot of information. So, yeah, it's our understanding that he was fired or about to be fired, left and came back. But, you know, until we hear it directly from a public official who's, you know, has the authority to do so, I guess we'll have to hold off. The one thing I can tell you is police have swarmed a home on the northwest side of Milwaukee, believed to be the gunman's home. They're obviously collecting as much evidence as they can, trying to see if there's anything there that can help them piece this all together.
Ryan Burrow is in Milwaukee. Check in with us later, Ryan. I'm sure more information will become available. Pass it along when you find out more, okay?
You got it.
Ryan Burrow with WGN Radio News.
Well, I think I've talked to you before about the switchplate screws.
Oh, are you one of those guys?
Absolutely. They need to be... I got that from my dad. They need to match.
I didn't even know...
What, do you live all willy-nilly?
I live all willy-nilly. I'm so careless and carefree, I don't even know if my switchplate screws are lined up even.
And you probably ideally want them vertical to line up with the, you know, the switch itself.
The switch itself.
Right.
And now, Steve, it's starting to bug me even as I stand here thinking about
it. Yeah, those are all askew.
I'll light the fire while you place the flowers in the vase that you bought today.
It's 9:40. This is WGN. Good morning to you. I'm John Williams. People have a lot of funny things about their houses. We've been discovering that on the show the last few days. I just wanted to mention one other category of OCD-like behavior that a lot of you carry around, and I'm seeing it on our text line today. You can always join us on the phone or by texting 312-981-7200, and that is at the gas pump. 309 said, John, when I pump gas, the final amount has to be an amount ending in either 00, 0.25, 50 cents, or 75 cents. No other ending numbers will do. If you miss it, you got to go up to the next 25 cents. John, I always end a purchase of gas on the number 9. John, I always go down the stairs slowly, counting down, and often hear the voice of the count from Sesame Street, but only when I go down the stairs. And the list goes on of strange pieces of behavior that a lot of us carry around. I was championing that TV show Cheer, the docuseries on Netflix. Dave, you haven't seen that yet, have you?
I have not watched it.
I'm recommending it to all my patients who chew gum, not because I'm into competitive cheering. It's about the Navarro Junior College near Dallas in Texas and how they have this competitive cheer team and how well they do. But it's not about cheering as much as it is just about the relationships between the coach and the athletes, these cheer students and them with each other, although it is also about how just blisteringly dangerous that sport is. And one of the kids that they really focus on is this Jerry Harris from Naperville, and he is a celebrity now as a result of this. He's not the most talented, but he is the most likable kid in that cast. So we reached out to Shannon Whelan, who whose family more or less adopted Jerry and raised him in Naperville. And we said, hey, you got to come on and tell us more about this. And she wrote us back. Well, Bob Surratt gets messages from, Ron Howard. I did hear back from Shannon Whelan. And she said, thank you for your message. We appreciate your interest in Jerry and the offer to appear on your show. But we've made the decision not to do interviews about Jerry as we feel this is his story to tell, not ours. However, if you're interested in talking with Jerry, reach out to his agent. We enjoy your program. The Whelans of Naperville got that going for me and appreciate the continued interest in Jerry. Shannon, we truly are and wish him nothing but the best. We reached out to his agent. He has one now. Appreciate your message and consideration. Jerry is unfortunately unavailable leading up to Daytona, but thank you for thinking of him best. I'm sorry that story ends there. I was hoping that we would be able to bring him to us maybe after the National Cheer Championships.
Should I try, John?
Right, maybe, or maybe we get Surratt too, because he's obviously pumped into the worldwide celebrities here. So maybe you can get a hold of him. I'd love to talk to him or the family. Your OCD-like behavior, John, whether it's chips, nuts, or pretzels, I have to eat the small broken pieces first. Your OCD behavior, John, when I go to Whole Foods, and let's say I see a box of wine. If one is missing, I have to replace it on the shelf so everything looks even at the store. The other day, we were visiting with Dave Drucker. He is the Secretary of State spokesperson. And Dave Drucker, you took a question from a listener that I kind of distracted us from. This is the question from one of our listeners the other day. Gail, you're on WGN. What did you need to know? Hi.
Hi, Dave. I'm a grandma. You know, try to do everything early. I have a college granddaughter. She doesn't have a job, and she doesn't get bills come to the house. What would she need for real IT?
Okay, so then we kind of lost her, and I don't think I gave Dave a chance to respond to that. Hey, Dave, are you still there? Good morning.
Yeah, I am. Good morning, John. How are you today?
Really good. So I think
good.
The point
of... Let me apologize to Gail, too. I might have helped, you know, get you off the message, too.
No. That was
but I do have an answer for her.
I derailed us. And I think the point of this call, right, Dave, is what if my college kid or somebody doesn't have all of the documentation because they aren't paying utility bills, that sort of thing, right?
No, that's a good point. It's a good point. The options that the young lady would have would be she could use a major credit card. That statement would be good. A voter registration card would work.
Yeah.
A bank statement would work. I'm thinking the young lady, if she's in school, probably has a checking account. And then another thing that she might try would be if she has a letter from the university, if she's in school now, that alludes to the home address, that's mailed to her home address. We would accept that as well as mail.
That's good to know. I think that sometimes, Dave, you and I have talked about this before, the business of getting your real ID is going to involve you not just gathering up the right documents, but you're going to have to acquire some of the documents. If you don't have a credit card, maybe you need to get a credit card. If you don't have a bank account or a voter ID, then maybe you need to go get those things. So,
that's a good point, John. I think there's a lot of people, especially as my generation, as you get old, as one gets older, that it's difficult to find Social Security cards.
Oh, my God.
May not be around.
And by the way,
the process
Dave,
does take a little bit of work to go to the Social Security Administration, but they're very good at getting them back to people.
But the Social Security cards from decades ago are paper and they're typed. They are so utterly forgeable or fadeable. Will you all accept an old Social Security card if I happen to find it?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes,
okay.
They will.
And if I don't have that and I want that, here again, go to the Social Security office. They can reissue you one, right?
Yeah, and if someone is working, if they present their W-2 form that has the SOCH on it, they will accept that.
Yeah. We're talking about Real ID with Dave Drucker from the Secretary of State's office.
And, John, this actually is related to a question we discussed once before, but I think bears repeating. We had an older person call a few weeks ago who had a similar situation, that she lived with her son.
Right.
And she said that
utility bills.
The utility bills were all in the son's name. And, you know, what would she do for mail? Again, I would suggest that she could use the credit card, a bank statement, the voter registration, or the son could take one of the utility bills and add her name to it.
Right.
We would accept that as well.
That's a good point. I do remember that very specific solution. Then just add that person's name to the gas bill, the utility bill, even a joint checking account, something
yes,
like
sir.
That. But again, I just need to make the point, I think, Dave, that some of you are frustrated. Not everybody. A lot of people, you're in, you're out, and it's fine. But if you're one of those people that's frustrated because you don't have or can't find the documents, that's too bad, but I mean, literally, you now have to take, you got till October, you have to take the extra steps to literally acquire those documents in order to get Real ID, and you have to have Real ID October 1st if you want to fly, if you want to travel.
That's correct. And John, your advice there is excellent, and I could just, if I could reemphasize that website that has the interactive device, and that people, if they forgot what I've said here, they can go to that, and they'll have different options for those categories. They'll be told exactly what they need and what options are available. realid.ilsos.gov.
Dave, we also got an email after you joined us, and this is the last question I have for you. John, they asked for my marriage certificate when I went to get Real ID. Please bring this up to Dave. I've been married for 39 years. Thank goodness I brought it along, and I also brought along my passport as well. The only items I didn't bring were my parents and husband for proof. The bottom line is over-prepare. But if can you just talk about a marriage
Absolutely.
Certificate
and who needs it? We tried to make it a little easier, John. The point's well taken. I get it. We need to show every name change that takes place. And actually, originally, they were looking to get the divorce papers, too, but we've eliminated that. But, you know, each time there is a name change, they do need to see the certificate.
Really? So does that mean every married woman who has taken her husband's name needs to show her old name on the marriage certificate and her new name on the other documentation?
Yes, sir.
And if here again, Dave, if you don't know where your marriage certificate is and you want to get Real ID and you're a female, do you have to then go find a marriage certificate?
Yes.
Huh. Yeah, men don't have that problem, do they, Dave?
Well, no. There aren't too many cases where I think the man takes the woman's name.
Maybe that happens. But
maybe
if the guy's...
we should be moving into that direction.
but if for other reasons the guy's name has changed, I don't know what those are, but then he needs to document every... And if you've been married and divorced and your name has changed a few times, do you need to find...
Each marriage certificate needs to be brought in, but you don't have to bring in the divorce papers.
Okay. I'm sure I'll get more questions down the road, but you're very helpful when you join us. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Dave Drucker is the spokesperson for the Secretary of State's office. And every now and then, one of you will send us a question like that, and I'm happy to pass it along.
I know you have been following what's going on at the Chicago Tribune and the
Alden Capital.
Right. Yeah. Cranes is reporting this morning, and these are two major names in the Tribune. Bruce Dold is leaving as Tribune editor-in-chief, and Peter Kendall will leave as managing editor at the end of the week.
At the end of the week?
Kendall is. Dold will stay till April, but he's being replaced immediately as editor-in-chief by Colin McMahon. It's hard to imagine the Tribune without Bruce Dold.
No kidding. He was a reporter. He was an editor. He was the editorial page editor.
Right.
And then moved to the top seat at the Chicago Tribune.
And Peter Kendall as well moved his way all the way up to managing editor.
And, you know, the big, this Alden Global Capital, an evil and anonymous dark company that buys companies, tears them to shreds, and then makes more money for its zillionaire owners. That's Alden Global Capital. They're the company that will take a controlling stock interest of the Chicago Tribune, but not until this summer. Earlier this winter, employees of the Chicago Tribune were offered a buyout. As I recall, Steve, if you'd been there for 8 years or more, you were offered a buyout.
Greg Cott, I think, is one who took that.
Yeah, right, exactly. David Haw is no longer with the Tribune, a very popular columnist. So is this that? Is this them taking a buyout or just quitting because they see the change coming?
I don't think it's them taking the buyout. I think I'm not going to speak for Bruce or for Peter, but I don't think it was part of a buyout.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So just one more time, Steve. Give me that headline.
So Bruce Dold is leaving as editor-in-chief and Peter Kendall as managing editor of the Tribune coming up in the next few weeks.
It's coming up on 10 o'clock here on WGN. It's 9:56. Steve will do more WGN radio news at the top of the hour. A friend of mine is one of those people who is afraid to travel right now. It's amazing what's happening. You know, the Dow is an indication of really where people's hearts are. You're nervous, so people are moving money. Down 10% is the Dow now over the last few days of trading. It's currently, I don't have the screen in front of me, Steve. Do you see what the Dow is off at this moment? It was 900 points a moment ago.
It's recovered a bit. It's down 682.
Isn't that crazy?
The NASDAQ down a bigger percentage at 257, 2.8%.
And another way you can just tell is that people are so nervous about traveling, literally right now. So many folks are thinking about canceling their trip. We took a call yesterday from a gentleman, just as another friend of mine was saying, John, what should I do? I want to have one more conversation like that. Maybe you can be part of it after the 10 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. Keep going, says producer Elif. You go all the way till the top of the hour. Thank you for that, Elif. This is one other thing I wanted to point out along this line, and that was the president's press conference yesterday. To me, if there was ever a definition of alternative facts, it is the administration's presentation last night. This is not me being critical, by the way. This is me simply making the observation that you can say something that is true, and I can say something that is true. And they may sound different, but they're both true. So here's two sound bites. We'll start with the health officials who said things like this yesterday about coronavirus.
The degree of risk has the potential to change quickly, and we can expect to see more cases in the United States.
We do expect more cases, and this is a good time to prepare. As you heard, it's the perfect time for businesses, healthcare systems, universities, and schools to look at their pandemic preparedness plans.
So that's a couple of the healthcare officials, and they are talking there about the inevitability of it in Northern California. In California now, we have one case that they can't document how a human being got it. We have 330 million people in the United States, and a dozen or so people have had it. Some of them have been brought here from that cruise ship, of course. And there is no known case of human-to-human transmission that we can't document, but this one case now. So I don't know if that makes you feel good or makes you feel bad, but it's kind of a dour look there, a sort of real-world and serious look there by the healthcare officials. All of that true. Standing next to them is the president. The president's take on it is stuff like this.
Because of all we've done, the risk to the American people remains very low. We're ready to adapt and we're ready to do whatever we have to as the disease spreads, if it spreads. We have in quarantine those infected and those at risk. We have a lot of great quarantine facilities. The vaccine is coming along well, and in speaking to the doctors, we think this is something that we can develop fairly rapidly, a vaccine.
So I guess you would expect that from the president. He wants people to feel good about it, and the doctors want you to take it seriously. And people will characterize those two statements as either being too alarmist or too naive. I think they're both true. It just depends on who's telling you what. I got a text from a listener named Allison who said, "Boy, John, humans are super neurotic." Somebody else said, "Don't call this OCD behavior. It's neurotic behavior, strange behavior. But for those who really suffer from OCD, it is life-altering." Thank you for that, 630. I understand your point. "John, I'm feeling good about myself today, listening to all of these people who are just like me. For instance, 847 said, I always end the purchase of gas at 0.41. Somebody else said they had to end it on a quarter. Somebody else said that the gas must roll up to a number ending in 9. This person, 41 cents, has to be the last of the purchase price. Have no idea why. If you are planning on traveling, maybe you are thinking twice about it now because of this coronavirus. It's 1012 on WGN. Good morning. This is John Williams. I hope you're having a good day, but I know a lot of you are nervous right now. John, my friend's daughter is studying abroad in Florence this semester, and they are sending the students home because of the coronavirus in Italy. John, I'm concerned about the number of Chinese students in our country that were home for the holidays in December. John, my husband and I had a cruise planned to Belize and Yucatan Peninsula in April. We canceled it. John, I'm going to Rome April 4th through the 11th with five others. My travel agent is always checking for problems. I do have travel insurance. John, we leave in a week for a Caribbean cruise and we're very concerned. And I've just, without soliciting, have been getting all kinds of texts like this. And I got a message from a friend, Kathy Boranello, who has traveled with us before with Kelly Cruises. And Kathy's on the phone. Hi, Kathy. It's John. How are you?
Hi, John. Good morning.
Good. You're a nurse by trade, right, Kathy?
Yes, I am.
You're planning on traveling soon, aren't you?
Well, actually, we were supposed to leave Saturday for a wonderful trip to Hawaii. And, you know, I have been just reading and researching and listening and observing. And frankly, the bottom line message that came out of it all is there's just so much uncertainty right now. I think this thing's going to let itself be known over the next couple to few weeks, which is that we needed to leave Saturday. And I guess part of my being such a pragmatic person and as a nurse person, you know, assess figure out the plan and implement. I can't do it because I don't know where this thing is going. So yesterday I pulled the trigger and I canceled to postpone. I'm hoping we get there maybe in May. I'm hoping this thing takes that path. Again, like I said, I think it's going to let itself be known over the next couple of weeks which way it's going to go. And I think had I been going somewhere in the continental United States, I wouldn't have been as apt to cancel it. But the fact that I'm, you know, going to be off the continent and have to get back and maybe quarantined in a hotel just That's what I did. I canceled. I postponed it yesterday.
As part of that decision, obviously, Hawaii has got good hospitals. It's a state in the United States, but it's also high population of Asians. Was that part of your consideration?
Well, you know, and again, yes. I mean, you have to be careful, right? You don't want to start thinking of this from a xenophobic perspective. And, you know, I've been hearing a lot of things that, kind of ring that to me. But, yes, I mean, when you think of the fact that huge population of tourism in the Hawaiian Islands comes from Japan, and I don't believe there's been any blocking of Japanese tourism coming into Hawaii, nothing I could see. In fact, anything I read really was still encouraging that because they're very concerned about their economy. I mean, tourism's everything, and I get that. But if you heard this morning, Japan has closed all the schools for a month. So, and are we really getting the, true reading on this issue globally? You know, maybe globally a little bit better than even from our own country. You know, I don't know that we're getting all the, straight information and facts. I know some of the test kits were questionable as far as the, you know, the fact that they were valid.
The CDC. The CDC sent out test kits, and they were proven to be defective.
Exactly.
So they have to reissue those.
Yeah. So do we really know, you know, and again, it's going to let itself be known over the next couple of weeks. If I was leaving 2 or 3 weeks from now, I would not have canceled. I would have waited and to see how this evolves.
Kathy was going to go on a, 3-week vacation to Hawaii?
Yeah, like 3.5 weeks. Like, no, don't remind me.
Well, Hawaii will still be there. Listen, I have a lot of wisdom about this now, having thought about it for 2 days, but I'm not in the situation you are. Are you going to lose money as a result of this decision?
Well, no. I mean, well, yes, it's going to cost a little. I mean, it did cost, it's happened. So, I mean, I did it. I always get the trip insurance. So I did have trip insurance. And, you know, there's like a rebooking fee. And a couple of the flights are going to be credits, not refund. And, you know, I'll just have to make sure I get there.
Well, Kathy, what does trip insurance do you in a situation like this?
Well, all right. So the condo that we had rented in Maui for 17 nights was a non-refundable reservation of $5,000-something, and the trip insurance just paid for that.
Are you kidding me?
No, yeah.
But I mean,
I would never not do trip insurance.
Well, I wouldn't. I don't either, but I'm surprised that they cover that because you're not sick and Hawaii's not under quarantine. So the fact that you've chosen not to go there, however valid your reasoning is, I'm surprised that they are going to pay that bill.
Well, this was a trip. How did they call it? It was a different name. Hopefully it'll come to me before we're done talking, but it didn't say trip insurance. It was trip something. And it was only $360
for reimbursement of this expense. Wow.
Yeah. And they're covering the flight. There was a mistake. I booked this whole thing through one of those booking, you know, agencies that you get online. And, the gentleman who set it up for us did not include our flight home for some reason in the insurance policy. So that's the only one that I got dinged on where they're going to issue a credit for that.
Kathy, how did you... I've had trip insurance before and didn't have great luck with it. So how did you persuade them that they need to pay you back for the airplane ticket that you could use and the condominium that you could use?
There was no issue. That's how that's how this voucher works. They refund your, and they refund the airfare. They refund the non-refundable hotel reservation. Again, the error they made by not including the flight home.
Right, so you get to
there was
that.
A rebooking. For me to use that now, they give you the credit, and then you have to pay the difference if you book something that's more expensive, but then they charge you $200 per ticket to rebook it. Well, I told them, I said, look, you guys, you know, forgot to put that in. is there anything you can do? And she put me on hold. Let me tell you, I was on the phone for 3.5 hours. I'd rather have the virus. Seriously, I was telling my husband, he's sitting here with me. I'm like, you know what? Should we just go? Can I hang up and we'll just go? This is like crazy. But they know this was, and is it okay if I say the name of the company?
I really want to know. Wait a minute. So, okay. Kathy, hold on.
It was Expedia. Okay, through Expedia.
Hold on, Kathy. Stop. So Kathy was going to go to Hawaii for up to 3 weeks. She was going to go with her husband to Hawaii, but worried that she'd be maybe not even contracting the virus so much as quarantined because somebody in that tourist-heavy state has the virus, and then maybe you're stuck. Maybe you have it, maybe you don't, but right. you can't enjoy your vacation if you're sitting in a hotel room. So you book it through Expedia, and what I also want to know is the name of the insurance company you got that will cover your expenses, not because you were sick, but because you were afraid of getting sick. Do you know the name of the insurance company?
When I booked this thing, he said, do you want the insurance? It will allow you to cancel for any reason.
I got to look that up.
Hang on, if I could find...
Well, you don't have to knock yourself out right now, but maybe somebody else has had experience like this.
Yeah.
My number's 312-981-7200, but I think that's really helpful to know because the situations I've been in, you have to document things in order to get remunerated. Mm-hmm. And you just called and said, I don't want to go. Give me $5,000. Right. Hokey smokes.
And it wasn't five, it was more than that. That was just the one. There was actually two hotels involved, one in Oahu, one in Maui. Vacation waiver. There it is. I couldn't think of the term.
That's the name of that's what you got. It didn't tell me the company, but a vacation waiver.
It was through Expedia. I did all this through Expedia. I got Expedia on the phone yesterday, and they kept putting me on hold. Like I said, I was on the phone for 3.5 hours, but they took care of everything.
Wow.
They kept talking to each place, the airline, the hotel.
Oh, really?
And this is a vacation waiver.
Huh.
So, how does it work? You know, if you purchase a vacation waiver, you may change or cancel your trip for any reason one time prior to the scheduled start time. So, for any reason, you could call and just say, I don't want to go. But you're going to, now when I rebook this, I'm going to have to buy another vacation waiver, right? I mean, but well worth it, frankly.
Kathy, here's a couple of text messages. John, travel insurance, there's an additional premium for cancel for any reason coverage, but others have said it's worth it. Carmen texted in and said travel insurance is important to have, but some or many policies may not cover an epidemic or pandemic, so make sure you check carefully.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy cancel for any reason trip insurance, John. My husband is supposed to take a group of high school students on a trip at the end of March, and it was a requirement for all of the participants to purchase this type of mm-hmm. insurance. This is good to know, Kathy.
Again, you have to ask those questions specifically so that you know what your options are. Well, and this, when I asked them like 3 times, I'm like, are you sure I can cancel this for any reason?
Yeah, no, I get it. What were you thinking, Steve?
Hey, Kathy, it's Steve Bertrand. How are you?
Hey, Steve, good to talk to you.
So why don't you just come over, John and I'll throw you a pig roast. We'll bury a pig in the backyard and we'll just do a luau.
Hey, throw in a Mai Tai and you got a deal.
Do you two know each other? Is Kathy travels
with me, sure.
With Steve Bertram.
Oh, my gosh. Steve Bertram has been my travel agent many times. Absolutely.
Well, we sure appreciate your patronage here, Kathy. And, here was the other bit of wisdom I had. I mean, Steve leads trips. I lead trips. I'm going to Italy, in October, and I am not worried about it. I mean, I'm paying attention to this, but I have no plans on canceling my trip, and Kelly Cruz's doesn't either. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be able to enjoy my trip. But if you're scheduled to go someplace and it's safe, but you still can't enjoy it, then I'm not going to judge you for canceling your trip because you're supposed to not survive a trip. You're supposed to enjoy a trip.
Exactly. And right now, again, I mean, I have to reinforce, this is the uncertainty factor. I find myself in this peculiar window. I'm a nurse. I'm not worried. I can go. I know about washing my hands, not touching your face, and I'm not worried about catching anything. First of all, this is like the flu. I mean, you know, you can catch it the way you catch the flu. I can protect myself. I'm not worried about that. It's the, because of this uncertainty factor, if I'm in that hotel, I was going to stay at the Hilton Hawaiian Village for a week. You know, it's kind of a hot spot with this right now. And somebody got sick. They just put a whole hotel with 1,000 people in it under quarantine in the Canary Islands. That can absolutely happen there. And again, I think it's because of where we find ourselves right now in this epidemic evolving, hopefully not to a true pandemic.
Do any of us know the answer to this question? Say you have to stay in the hotel for 2 weeks under quarantine. Who pays that hotel bill? Three meals a day and the lodging. Who pays for that?
Exactly. I have no idea. Can you imagine? I mean,
I imagine the hotel. No, I was thought about this because what does quarantine mean? That means that the state has intervened and said you can't leave. My guess is then the state would have to compensate the hotel, but I can't imagine that that's your expense. I'm not sure. I would
think that. I would hope that to be the case, but I really don't know. Right. I just don't want somebody telling me I can't leave my room. I that would just not work well for me. That's what pushed me
over
the edge.
Well, I've met you, and I've traveled with you, and I know that would be very difficult for your husband if...
Very funny.
If the two of you were...
There is a balcony, you know. He could go
spend 13 of the 14 days camped out on the balcony because you're a great traveler. You're a high-energy person, and I've always enjoyed your company, Kathy. So,
thank you.
I'm sorry this isn't working out for you, but maybe down the road. And keep us posted on what your travel plans are.
I will, John. Always good to talk to you, and Steve as well.
Bye now.
Take care.
Thank you, Steve. It's 10:32. Hey, John, what about packages that I get from China? We've talked about this with healthcare officials, and they said, packages from China, you're fine. You're fine. If it makes you feel good to wipe them down with an alcohol rub or Lysol, go ahead and do that, the package or the item, the shoe that you got in the mail. But if you contemplate the pathogen path from China to your doorstep in a package you got in the mail from China, it's almost impossible to conceive a way that you would pick up the virus from that. But if it makes you feel good, wipe it down. But it's okay. That was what somebody told us last week. About the stock market, 708 texted in and said, this is the first time I'm not worried about stock losses, though on the Dow, we're off 10% now over the last 3 days. The virus will pass. There will be a vaccination like there is for the flu. And the market will bounce back quickly, says a more confident or optimistic person from 708. They said on the CBS News this morning that a vaccination is maybe 18 months out. The president kind of alluded to that yesterday, and he made it sound like it was soon. You all have a discussion with yourselves about what the definition of soon is. And John, traveling to Disney World for spring break, we're not concerned. When Zika was a big thing, they gave you mosquito spray when you checked in. I don't know if they are stocking up on masks to hand out if they need to. Good luck finding them. All I do is get unsolicited text messages from people just about every day saying I was at the hardware store, I was at Home Depot, I was at the drugstore, cannot find a face mask to save my life. Some of the questions and comments and observations.
And when you say to save your life, that's
an expression.
Hyperbole.
You read my mind.
312-981-7200 to text and shut me up. So did you see this story out of Boston? The heir to the Hot Pockets fortune was one of the people.
Yeah, she was in court yesterday, right?
Yeah, sentenced to 5 months in prison, actually on Tuesday, for trying to cheat and bribe her daughter's way into school as part of the nationwide college admission scam. You figure people that are getting their kids into Stanford and have enough money to pay to get in illegally probably are pretty well off. And so some of them are famous movie stars. And then some of them are people that aren't so famous, but doggone it, they got some coin. The heir to the Hot Pockets fortune. Just think about that. I didn't know that was a thing, that there is a Hot Pockets fortune and that somebody is the heir to it, but this woman is. Michelle Janavs, J-A-N-A-V-S.
People still eat Hot Pockets?
That's what I'm wondering, Mary.
I don't know.
Her father and uncle invented the microwavable Hot Pockets turnovers Then they sold the company.
See, it's a pastry.
Don't get me into that conversation
again. Turnover.
I'm so very sorry that I tried to create an unfair advantage for my children, she said at sentencing. The judge said, quote, the vast majority of parents do not brazenly try to push their kids in the side door. They don't love their children any less than you do, but they just play by the rules of common decency and fair play. Janovs admitted to paying the consultant at the center of the scheme, that Rick Singer guy, $100,000 to have a proctor correct her two daughters' ACT exam answers. She also agreed to pay another $200,000 to have one of her daughters labeled as a fake beach volleyball recruit at the University of Southern California. Her lawyers portrayed her in court documents as a dedicated mother and philanthropist who fell for Singer's manipulative sales tactics. She's truly a good human being, her attorney said, but she did an extremely wrong thing here. Her family's company, Chef America, the makers of Hot Pockets, was sold to Nestle's in 2002 for more than $2 billion. The family sold the Hot Pockets company for more than $2 billion. So she's got a few $100,000 laying around to try and sneak her kids into USC. And I guess, were they both USC or was one of them Stanford? This says USC. Thanks to the fortune of Hot Pockets. You cannot hear Hot Pockets and not think about Jim Gaffigan, who famously said this.
I'm moving a little slow tonight. I had a Hot Pocket for dinner. Good to see I'm not the only white trash here. I buy the Hot Pockets. I go in grocery stores. I'm like, oh, I'll get these. I've never eaten a Hot Pocket and then afterwards been, I'm glad I ate that. I'm always like, I'm going to die. I was looking at a box of Hot Pockets. They have a warning printed on the sign. It said, warning, you just bought Hot Pockets. I hope you're drunk or heading home to a trailer. Never really see that on a menu when you go out to dinner. You know, let's see, I'll have the Caesar salad and the Hot Pocket. Tonight's specials, we have a sea bass, which is broiled, and we have a Hot Pocket, which is cooked in a dirty microwave. Is your Hot Pocket cold in the middle? It's frozen. But it can be served boiling lava hot. Will it burn my mouth? It'll destroy your mouth. How'd they come up with that? Was there some kind of marketing meeting like, I got an idea. How about we fill a Pop-Tart with nasty meat? And you can cook it in a sleeve thing. And you can dunk it in the toilet. There is the vegetarian Hot Pocket for those of us that don't want to eat meat but still would like diarrhea. Hot Pocket.
And he goes on. He goes on and on and on. Jim Gaffigan, Hot Pockets. Google that if you want the five-minute version, but you get the idea. You know, the other day we were talking about Windy City Rehab. That show cannot get out of its own way. It seems like every time you open up the newspaper, turn on TV, there's another story about Windy City Rehab, the home flipping show for high-end properties in the popular neighborhoods of Chicago. And this Allison Victoria lady who just seems to be ticking people off everywhere she goes. Neighbors, creditors, contractors, city officials, and for that matter, viewers. John, I stopped watching Windy City Rehab not only because of the fraud, but because whenever something went wrong with the rehab, and it always does, Allison, that's Allison Victoria of the show, would throw a major hissy fit and never take the blame for anything. Who wants to watch that? This one said, I worked with a couple who were on House Hunters, and they did buy the house you saw. John, the house directly behind me on Jansen was rehabbed by Windy City Rehab. It's still being rented, and per one of the tenants, she had to lower the rental price. Remember the other day, Stephen, we were talking about this, and you were surprised to hear that some of the people that appear on the show as buyers were actors or actresses?
Yes.
You were so naive.
I don't watch many of these shows, but like when they're trying to buy their dream house and they've got it between three, those people are actors?
Yeah. And in the case of Windy City Rehab, and I was reminded that a friend of my daughter-in-law was one of the actresses on Windy City Rehab. They posed as interested buyers, which isn't that hard to do. You know, you just put on a coat and walk through and go, oh, I like the countertops. Now you're on Windy City Rehab. But you're not interested in the countertops because you're not a potential buyer. You're an actress they hired. You're a citizen they hired to just walk through the house and let them videotape you. Allison Victoria tweeted the other day, Dear Chicago Tribune, Sun-Times, and other Chicago media, pretty please get your facts straight before you publish stories. This home foreclosure story has nothing to do with me, my show at Windy City Rehab, or HGTV. Hashtag clickbait. Thank you. There was a property that they were working on, and it had been foreclosed on. I don't know who's in trouble there, but she wants you to know it's not her. Fair enough. It's 10:42. Ryan Burrow is in Milwaukee today. He's following the case of the terrible, terrible shooting. Did you notice that the reporting includes the fact that the gun had a silencer on it? I have a question about silencers, and I think I have an answer, but I'm going to need your help after this. I'm reading in the USA Today today. It says, just hours before that rampage, Democratic Governor Tony Evers of Wisconsin, this is before they knew what was going to happen, called on lawmakers to take up legislation aimed at keeping guns away from people who are dangerous. In response, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, a Republican from Juneau, made it clear that Wisconsin's gun laws would not change under a Republican-controlled legislature, reminding voters of the long-standing divide that all but ensures deadly incidents like Wednesday's are not going to spur new gun policies anytime soon. We're going to have that discussion about the Second Amendment forever, Fitzgerald told reporters in Franklin about an hour before the killings. A lot of the provisions that are in place already, people are satisfied with. A short time after, a 51-year-old man entered the factory with two handguns, opening fire on employees. Now the community is left grieving. I don't see here, but Steve, do I understand correctly that there was a silencer on one of those guns or both of those
guns? I'd seen reporting to that. You know, we just don't have very much official yet from
the
police
there. Yeah. So let's just assume for a moment that that is the case. And I've been trying to figure out what the rules on silencers are. And maybe you know more about it because you have a FOID card or you're just more into the gun world than I am. I'm not. I don't understand the purpose of a silencer. Like, I don't know, if you're at a shooting range, do you put headphones on? If you're shooting range, do you use a silencer? It just seems to me like one thing a silencer on a gun would do would be enable you to shoot somebody without alerting other people that the shooting has taken place. So I want to be really careful in that mindset about who gets a silencer and what their motive is. Now, we've been dialing around a little bit, and according to the NRA website, it says if silencers are legal to own in your state, and then they list the states in which silencers are legal, and Illinois is not listed, but Wisconsin is, then pick one that fits your shotgun, handgun, or rifle. And then they talk a little bit about how to pick a good silencer. That's from the NRA website, and they make it sound like they're legal in Wisconsin. We went to the Wisconsin State Legislature website, and they say under firearm silencers that it is a Class H felony to possess one in Wisconsin unless you're in the National Guard, unless you're a peace officer, or unless you have complied with the licensing and registration requirements. So then we clicked through on that, and it sounds like just about anybody that goes through the legal process of getting trained or passing a test or whatever can get a silencer in Wisconsin. If you don't have that additional, Title II firearms registration or training, then it will be a felony for you to have a silencer, but you can get one. I don't know how difficult they make it to get a silencer in Wisconsin, but I don't understand the purpose of that either. Right? Because if you're firing a gun, I know that makes a bang, and maybe you don't want to hear that noise, but you're going to do it because you're defending yourself. If you, though, are out to commit mayhem, a silencer actually might enable you to commit more mayhem before people find out about it, before they hear it. I don't know how much a silencer silences the gun, but it seems to me like that would be a tool that would be valuable to you if you're out to shoot people. So it seems to me like silencers would be something to try and limit or make very difficult for people to get a hold of. Whoever sells, delivers, or possesses a firearm silencer is guilty of a Class H felony, it says in Wisconsin. But maybe you're from up there and you can help me out on this. My number is 312-981-7200. Any person who, however, has complied with the licensing and registration requirements under Section 26 of the Code, I guess you can own one. It is generally a Class H felony to deliver, sell, or possess a firearm silencer. However, an exception exempts from this prohibition any person who has complied with the 15 federal law defines, and they go on.
Okay, but so what? The way I'm hearing you say that is it's illegal unless you do any of these thousands of easily done things.
Correct.
Right? So to start the sentence with is illegal might be a little misleading.
Evidently.
Instead, it should be all you need to do to buy a silencer in the state is...
Right. And if you don't comply with this, then you're breaking the law, but you sure can get a silencer in Wisconsin, is what that sounds like. Hey, James, you're on WGN. Thanks for calling in. What can you do for us?
So to purchase a silencer or a suppressor, a lot of people are going to give you flack because they're actually suppressors. They don't silence anything.
Got it.
They actually probably only bring the decibel level down to about 100, 110 decibels. So it's still very loud. But to purchase it, you have to go through the National Firearm Act. You have to go through the federal government, through the ATF. You have to buy a $200 tax stamp. Just to do your paperwork, turn it in, you're probably looking at about an 8-month on the low side wait time before you get your stamp and actually can buy your suppressor.
That's very helpful. And have you done that? Do you know about this, James?
I live in Illinois. I've got buddies who live out of state who have done it. So I've never purchased one, but Illinois, you cannot own one. There are states. It's all based on state to state and what the state requires.
I did see that $200 tax on the suppressor. You know, I'd like to hear, James, would be somebody fire a gun for me, bam, then put the suppressor on, fire the gun for me, and let me hear that. Because this will sound stupid to you, but you know how it is in TV and movies. They just go, pew, and nobody notices.
You know, if you're shooting something like a very small caliber round and you're using what they call subsonic ammunition, then that is very, it is very doable to get it that quiet.
Yeah.
You're also spending, you know, a silencer or suppressor, you're probably spending around for one of that quality or a high quality one, you're around that $1,000 mark. But in all realness, they're actually quite loud. I mean, the big thing it does is it stops the flash of the muzzle. A lot of shooting complexes want legislature done to make these easier accessible because, as you know, we keep putting houses on land everywhere we can throughout the country, and shooting parks get a lot of flack about the noise. Whether they were there first or not, that's the biggest reason they're pushing for it.
Yeah, and I would imagine if you're all standing in a row with or without the headphones, if the shots you all are firing on the shooting range there were muzzled a little bit, then it would just be easier to enjoy the sport, right? I mean, I don't know if people
absolutely.
Use it that way.
Absolutely. But one thing you got to also remember is if you're going to a range, whether it's indoors or outdoors, personally, I've never been to an actual range where hearing and eye protection is not required at all times.
Yeah, the headphones and the goggles, huh?
Yeah, absolutely have to. I mean, it's just smart to do to begin with. But even at, especially an indoor range, when you're talking about being in a confined space and you have, say, six guys on the shooting line shooting, a lot of times I'll put earplugs in my ears and the headphones on top.
I still think,
it does.
Though, You know, it still seems to me, though, that if my agenda were mass killing, a silencer would be something, a suppressor, whatever you want to call it, would be something I would want to have to try and buy me some time or to try and minimize the danger to me, right? I can get more done with that thing on my gun than I can without that thing on my gun, right?
I'll tell you what, and this is just my opinion. I'm sure someone will say I'm very wrong. If you're outside in open land, yes. If the minute that you come into an enclosed area and you start shooting, that sound bounces off everything like you wouldn't believe. And while it is going to muzzle the sound to some degree, it's not going to make it completely quiet. It's not going to make it give you all this extra time. It's not a video game.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's not, and it's not James Bond or whatever I'm thinking of, because in my, I really want to hear the difference. And I really appreciate your call, James. I got to let you go, but I want to hear the difference between a gun pop with the muzzle and without, because I think in a lot of our minds it dramatically reduces the sound, and you're saying not that much, right?
There is, you know, the best way that I can describe it is that it takes the sharpness out of the sound.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting point.
But if you go on YouTube, I'm sure you'd be able to find several videos that will show the difference.
Yeah. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for the call, James.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too.
Ray, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? You're on the air.
Hello, John. The previous gentleman kind of described everything I was going to say. First and foremost, they're not silencers. They're suppressors and brings down the volume considerably, not completely. And like the gentleman also said, if you've ever been to a range, they help make the sport much more enjoyable. And really, he covered it all.
Yeah, I appreciate you listening. Thanks for the call, Ray. Have a good day. It's 10:55. There's another story in the news today. Again, our Ryan Burrow is in Milwaukee. We'll continue to take reports from Ryan as more information becomes available. It's a little frustrating, but only that. They need to do what they need to do, and the families need to be notified. But we don't know the who on this. We don't know the why. We don't know if the individuals that were shot were targeted. We'll just get that information as it becomes available. Our Ryan Burrow is up there. Also, did you see the story? I believe that Steve Grzanich reported on this earlier today. It might be in Steve Bertrand's news, too. The shuttering of red light cameras in Illinois. There's laws that they're going to take the red light cameras down. Guess what? Not that many of them are coming down. When I get to be king, I think they're all coming down. Now, I'm not king yet. The paperwork is tied up at Cook County. But it seems to me like those red light cameras were put up for the wrong reasons. They don't make them safer, and they cost you way too much money. So then why aren't they coming down? This is John Williams, our news click that we post at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page. Yesterday asked you about the Catholic Archdiocese of Chicago disapproving of eating impossible meat as a meat substitute during Lent. Subsequent reporting has suggested that that's not the view of the Archdiocese. They're not telling you can't eat impossible burgers. Or whatever those things are. Still, we asked before we knew all of those details. Shame on me. It seemed like that was their position. Now they say not really. Still, we asked you about that, and here's the results. The Archdiocese disapproves of Impossible Burgers as a meat substitute, and you said, that's right. It needs to feel like a sacrifice. We shouldn't eat those things. 24% of you agreed with them, even if they don't. 21% said, wrong, it's not meat, you can eat those things. And 55% of you said, wait, are we really talking about this? And yesterday, for a little while, we were. Today, the news click is going to be about red light cameras. Do you want them in your town? If you think they make intersections safer, and if you like the fact that they generate revenue for good things in your town, maybe you want red light cameras. Maybe you don't want the red light cameras in your town because you think they get people that shouldn't be caught, or you think they make the intersections unsafe. But it's very interesting how that's gone down, and I want to talk about that with you in just a minute here. Let me finish a couple of texts before I go any further, though, on topics we've talked about previously. The heir to the Hot Pockets fortune, is one of the people that is going to be sentenced for, or was she sentenced? We were just talking about this lady a little while ago. I think she's going to jail. Yeah, in fact, she's going to go to jail for over a year, I think it was, because she was one of the people that paid to get her kids into USC, a fake resume showing that the kid was a beach volleyball player, stuff like that. But the funny thing was that it was about Hot Pockets and that her vast fortune came from the sale of Hot Pockets company to Nestle for $2 billion. Mary Vanderbilt said, wait, there's still Hot Pockets out there? John 708 says, I love Hot Pockets, from Roger in Oak Lawn. Are you kidding me, says 773. I lived on Hot Pockets when I was young. Kids and young people eat anything, and pizza rolls are staples. Jim says, Hot Pockets are one of the biggest sellers at the grocery store. Still, I had no idea. We were talking about travel insurance with a listener in the last hour who has canceled her trip to Hawaii, not because they've got the virus there or she's sick, but because she's just nervous about it. She used her travel insurance and they're refunding the $5,000 that she put down for a few weeks at a condo in Hawaii. She's getting back her airfare, at least half of it. There was a mistake on the other half, but only because she didn't want to go. She didn't have to prove illness. There didn't have to be anything. She said, I just don't want it. And they refund the money. I've traveled a little bit with travel insurance, but the only kind I bought was for medical emergencies. John, that is the general purpose of trip insurance. You can pull out for any reason. I have a cruise booked for December, says 251, and for $270, it protects my $5,000 cruise. We are already covered for free if there is a reason the ship does not cruise, like weather, epidemics, etc., but the extra insurance I paid for lets me back out for any reason. Hey, King John, we're going to Tokyo March 21st, and we can't wait. Yeah, I'm hearing from some of you who are traveling boldly and brazenly into the unknown. You are not going to be slowed down for your trip by the coronavirus. So this is the story in the Chicago Sun-Crimes today. Neil Early wrote about it. State House takes first step towards shuttering red light cameras. Well, some of them, says the headline. There's a bill which passed the House 84-4 in Springfield. It's going on to the Senate now, but it does not apply to Chicago or the other 216 homeroom municipalities. That is, you heard that they're going to make red light cameras illegal in Illinois, and it looks like they are. But it is not for towns that are home rule. Home rule towns get to decide what they want. The state can't tell them what to do. Well, that's most of the towns in Illinois have home rule. So when the state says red light cameras are now going to be banned, you can't put them up anymore, and in fact, you have to take them down, that will only apply to 15% of the red light cameras that are out there. Chicago's home rule. Chicago doesn't have to do this. Chicago isn't doing this. Naperville, the same. And you know who's really against taking down the red light cameras? The mayors. The mayor of Southwest Suburban Justice called the lawmakers who passed this bill a bunch of idiots. Why would you throw the baby out with the bathwater, he said. Barrington Hills, the village manager there. North Riverside Village president said the cameras are a key revenue generator for his village. They help to fund the police and fire pensions. Without the cameras, the village may have to raise taxes or cut the budget. Libertyville's mayor said the cameras are about safety and they prevent traffic accidents. Federal investigation has given a renewed push, according to the Sun-Times, to the drive to ban red light cameras. They say in January, former state senator Marty Sandoval, the Democrat from Chicago, pleaded guilty to federal corruption charges, admitting in court that he accepted bribes from a person prosecutors described as having an interest in red light camera companies. That is, the reason that we got these things is because some of the legislators were taking money under the table, not because it was in our best interest. So I just want to put it back on you. If you were the king of your town, if you were in charge of Libertyville or North Riverside or Justice or Chicago, Would you say yes or no to red light cameras? They generate money for your town. They make the intersection safer. Or do they make the intersection less safe? They're catching people who shouldn't be caught, and they make us all drive more dangerously. I'm in the second group.
What's the second group?
The group of people that doesn't like red light cameras.
At all, for no reason. Right?
Well, I'd like to say I like them for a reason, and I'd like to think that the reason I like is because I think sometimes they do catch people who really didn't commit a very big crime, or they make the intersections less safe. Have you seen people speed up because they are afraid they're going to get caught by the red light camera? That's not a good idea. That's where I'm coming from on this, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, I think people are more likely to slam on the brakes because of it.
Oh, or that too, right.
You know, get rear-ended.
And now you're looking up Whistling Dixie, and all of a sudden, slam!
You're in an Allstate commercial.
I was just going to say, you're the tailgater tailgating on the way to the tailgate. What a great campaign that is. Okay, so here's my phone number, 312-981-7200, and this is your chance to call. We keep going here, Producer Elif. Good. Okay. And Jeff is going to say one thing about, I think, the travel insurance, but I want you to tell me what your thought is about those red light cameras. How much do you love them? How much do you hate them? Call me now. All right, Jeff, you go first, though. You're on WGN. What's on your mind?
So my wife was going to go to Istanbul on a business trip, and, you know, how many chances you had to go to Istanbul? So we bought a ticket for myself, bought the insurance, and it may be naive on my part, but once Turkey started to have some conflict with Syria, my wife's company pulled the plug on her trip, and because the threat level went up in the U.S., I thought I could use the insurance and get my money back, but yeah. To no avail. That did not work. So I'm just not a big fan, obviously, of the travel insurance. And again, maybe it's me for not reading the fine print, but I figured a threat level, you know, and as you mentioned earlier, someone got their money back without even proving coronavirus or, you know, having been exposed to it.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, not mentioning companies or names, but it's just, it's pretty disheartening.
Well, I'd be happy for you to mention the company. I mean, she told us the name of the provider she bought her insurance from, and she had to pay extra for it. And nobody's ever asked me if I want to pay extra for the kind that says, what if you just change your mind?
It was through a third party, Expedia,
yeah.
And then they offer insurance,
yeah.
And the insurance company was AIG. And so I filed a claim with AIG. Expedia can't help me. I have a, you know, $1,000 credit on Turkish Air that I'm never going to use. I'm just screwed, basically.
But you do have so you aren't now completely out. In theory, you do have a $1,000 credit. But I know that's
right. But I'm not going to. There's nowhere that Turkish Air flies that I'm going to fly. Just the insurance. I usually don't buy warranties when I buy an appliance. I usually don't buy that kind of stuff, and I did, and I shouldn't have.
I bought AIG travel insurance before, and I wasn't thrilled with it either. And now I'm just thinking the next time I do, I'm going to ask more questions, like how much more to get the, you know, insurance that covers anything, including my own whim.
Right.
And I didn't do that. It sounds like you didn't either. It's a good cautionary tale. I'm sorry it's for you. And by the way, Istanbul is lovely. I would go again in a heartbeat.
We are so disappointed it didn't work out.
Yeah. All right. Stay safe. Thanks for the call.
Hi, right, John. Thanks.
Jeff, I appreciate your listening. In fact, I am leading a cruise with Kelly Cruises to Istanbul in October. We'll visit Ephesus and then on to Greece and then on to Italy. No problem there. Timing, John. Actually, I have every confidence everything will be just swell in October when we go. And I'm telling you what, the reason that we are taking this trip is because I think Brenda has different points of interest on this trip than I do. But I think Istanbul is fantastic. And then when you get to Ephesus, you are standing amongst some of the great wonders of the world. Frank wanted to say something. Hey, Frank, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for calling, Frank. What can we do for you?
Hi there. I'm not in favor of the red light cameras. I am in favor of all stoplights having down the countdown.
Yes.
Because I've just trained three of my children, triplets, to drive, and they all got their licenses now. But when we're approaching a stoplight, to be able to see that counter counting down to 5 to 4, you know, okay, slow down, we got to stop, as opposed to zooming through without a new driver not even knowing whether or not the light's going to change or not. I just think it's more safer to have the counters countdown than to have the red light itself.
As a pedestrian, I like those in the cities. Are your kids then all 16 right now?
They're 17-year-old triplets going to high school. So,
wow.
But it was nerve-wracking trying to teach them to drive, and, you know, people speeding through. We have one area, Elm Street and Naperville Road, that the people just fly through there repeatedly, and they had the timers on there, and then they took them off. And it's ridiculous because there's a lot of accidents in that intersection. So I'm a big fan of the timers, not the red lights.
You know, if you have three,
having the counters on each of the stoplights.
Yeah. I get your point. I mean, and I'm just also thinking about somebody who has 3 17-year-olds. That would be 51 man years for you.
Well, not to mention my cost of my auto insurance going through the roof. But yeah.
Well, I got your point.
I enjoyed the show, and thank you.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, Frank. Mark, you're on WGN. Jump in there, Mark. What do you want to say?
I drive for a living in the Chicagoland area, a semi. And like the gentleman before, the countdown ones are great. The red light cameras, I see it every day. People either slam on the brakes or they fly through it. And I've seen more accidents because of that than ever. And you know what? I'm not saying that I don't like getting caught. I've been caught once, and I paid it. But people don't understand how they work and what to do. They get confused, and you see them hit the brakes, hit the gas, hit the brakes. You know, I like I said, the gentleman before, the countdown timers are a lot better. It doesn't get the revenue for the towns, but it's all about safety.
That's the point, isn't it? And you would know as a guy that's driving around all the time. Thanks for the call. Hey, Bill, you're on WGN. Talk to me, Bill.
Yeah, hi.
Hey.
I basically don't believe in the safety aspect of it, but I could see it being okay if they exempt penalty for right turn on red, because I think that's the big revenue generator, and if it just stopped people from blowing lights straight on, that I can see is a safety improvement.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, if somebody's racing through an intersection, I'm interested in what can stop that. But I think a lot of people don't come to a full and complete stop, and I just don't think that's a big crime on a red light.
Let's pass a law that says all the revenue from the red light cameras has to go to charity, and then let's see how many mayors want to keep them.
All right.
They'd be making the intersection safe. The drivers would still be fined.
Well, that's why the news click is, do you want that for your town? Because here's what those mayors say. Okay, we're going to lose several $100,000, and that could be an increase in property taxes. Or maybe we don't have another officer friendly. Or maybe a road doesn't get pothole patched. I mean, they put it back on the people going, well, we need the money. Why would a mayor care except that, you know, he's got to then do something that's going to cut services or increase the fees, and you don't want that either. So I think if you think about it like a mayor, I wonder if you would feel differently about it. So far, everybody wants those cameras out of the way. Even if they were a good idea, the problem with the red light cameras is that they came in the door. They came in the back door. This is the college admissions scandal of traffic lighting.
Right, even if you could have gotten in on your own.
That's right. I mean, if this is a good idea, then have the legislature pass it without taking money under the table. I mean, you shouldn't need to. It should just be good because you're good legislators and it's a good idea. But that didn't happen. So the whole thing stinks from the get-go. I mean, who knows if these are a good idea? All we know is some people were making a crime out of it. Okay, I'm done. Let's go back to, I wanted to talk to, let me see here. Where do we go next, Producer Olive? Line 2 to Robert. Hey, Robert, you're on WGN, Rob.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I'm a truck driver, and I have gotten a ticket over there with that light on 64 within Glendale Heights. Yeah. When you're coming down that hill for truckers, it's, the light seems long enough. I would love that they would put a counter on there. It would be amazing. It would be awesome. Now, when I got the ticket, I went to fight it in court. Sort in high quotations, court. I went to Glendale Heights, went to a police station, and there was an attorney for the city and a cop sitting there running these cases. And you ask the questions as far as, you know, whether lights get calibrated or so on and so forth. They don't answer none of the questions. So I don't see how that's in fairness to people that go there. And everybody was losing. It was, hey, here it is. And it was the attorney of the city and the police officer from the city and no judge. And like, I just kind of found that odd. I've always questioned that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Boy, talk about a cash-making operation, huh, Robert?
Yes, yes, yes. And that's and it's like you said, it stunk from the very beginning, and it's hard to clean it up, you know, knowing where all the funds are going, and it's almost a no-win situation. Yeah. But definitely the counters would work, you know, the counter clocks on those major intersections that are wide and, you know, that are four-lane, three-lane, so on and so forth.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I've always questioned the idea of why is an attorney and a cop from the city running these cases. I thought there was going to be an actual judge there.
And you'd think.
There wasn't.
Boy, you are really needy, Robert. You even want a judge there to make sure this is being done.
Please,
fairly.
I just want a fair trial. That's all. I want
boy,
a judge
oh
to see it both sides.
Wah, wah, wah. Oh, man. Hey, Robert, you have a good day.
You do the same thing.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for the call. We're talking about silencers or suppressors on guns, like the one that was used in Wisconsin yesterday. I said I wanted to hear the difference between a gun with and without. Elif found some video that demonstrates the effect of one of those things.
You were talking, but the hearse has been found. There was a freeway chase this morning.
Seriously?
In L.A. Yeah. So they've got one guy in custody and one guy in the back.
I get it. So I wonder if surely the person that stole that vehicle didn't realize there was a body in there.
The way the story was is that a mortuary worker was taking a body into a church when they jumped in the Navigator and took it. I don't know if they realized there was another body in there or not.
Wow.
Probably not.
Wow. I suppose that's a more serious crime than just stealing a car. It's not kidnapping because the person's deceased, I think. But I suppose there are additional charges if you steal a car with a body in it.
They could probably stiffen up the penalties.
Are you doing that on purpose or
is that
happening by accident?
Must be by accident.
Really, John, it's going to be swell when we finally get that vaccine 12 to 18 months away. Some of you aren't as encouraged by the president's words yesterday. Hey, John, what is the travel insurance that woman used that got all of her money back? That's what that conversation was you were watching me have with a colleague here. I'm calling my friend Kathy to ask her what the one was that she used. But when you travel, you can get travel insurance or you can pay for an upgrade and it will cover everything. Before we go to our doctor guest, I just wanted to play one sound clip for you. I told you I would before the news. And that is that shooting in Milwaukee, we've heard reports that there was a silencer on the gun. Those kind of muzzles or suppressors in Illinois are illegal. You can't get one. In Wisconsin, you can. Different states have different laws. We're talking about the wisdom of that. Should we allow the general public to get those muzzles for guns? And a guy called in and said they really don't silence the gun like they do in the movies. It's more just so at the shooting range, you're not bothering the neighbors or each other. But it's not like you're going to get away with something because nobody will notice. Then he said if it's a lower caliber and it's a certain kind of suppressor, it will make it maybe a lot harder to hear. But generally, it doesn't lower the decibels so much that it's like it is in a movie. I said, I want to hear what that sounds like. Producer Elif found on a website that advertises these what it would sound like. This is a 9mm gun. And Elif, go ahead and play the audio. Now, that's the gun itself. Play that one more time, Elif. This is the gun without the muzzle. Now, play it with the muzzle. Do that one more time. So there's that. 11:36 on WGN.
Just really quickly, it was not an ad. It was just a news story.
News story showing that, huh?
Yeah.
Dr. Paul Ravenna's on a phone line. Dr. Paul joins us on WGN Radio to just answer a couple more questions that we've had about the president's press conference last night. He is a Northwestern Medicine family physician. Doc, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
I suppose you saw the president's press conference yesterday or reports about it, right?
I did.
So what I'm kind of curious about is, on the one hand, they had the medical officials there, and they were saying it's imminent. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when this virus spreads in the United States. And we have a case in California of somebody who got it who did not have any connection to China. We don't know how that person got it. And then in the next breath, the president said it's minimal. The numbers are going to go down. A virus is coming. So, everybody, we've got things under control. I suggested earlier that both of those things may be true, but they sound like mixed messages. What was your reaction to what we heard last night?
You know, I think it's kind of a little, it's an accurate reflection of where we are, and that we just really don't know. This is all happening in real time, and new information is coming out. You know, anything that I say during this broadcast is going to be obsolete by the time it's over. So that's, I think, is just an accurate reflection. And in general, I do believe that absolutely we will find more cases in the U.S. Currently, that number is 60. And I'm sure that that's probably inaccurate, like I said, by the time this is over. So we will absolutely find more cases because we're thinking about it more, and because we're testing for it more, and we're getting more comfortable doing those tests and finding those patients who need to be tested. So absolutely, the number is going to go up, but just because, most likely, just because we're screening for it, I think our risk probably is still low.
My mind goes to arguing for, hey, this is something that is really dangerous, and then another part of my brain says, oh, relax. For instance, you say 60 cases, but that's not, but most of those cases are people who were either on the cruise ship or were in China and came back here. I mean, it's not like we had 60 organic cases from within the United States, but we simply have 60 people in the United States who have it, but we realize that when they came here, they came back to the United States. You see my point?
Absolutely.
So I think that's a distinction worth making, that it's not like, wow, what, for instance, when they show the 60, they say a lot of them are in Nebraska, and you think, well, whoa, wow, what's going on in Nebraska? That's because that's the hospital they put them in for the quarantine. There's a bunch of them that went to Texas. A Chicago couple is there.
Exactly.
And they went to Texas because that's the facility that we had for them. So I don't know if that helps people try and gauge the seriousness of this. Another way to look at it, Doc, to me is, there's 330 million of us, and there's only one case that we can't account for. So can you talk about the perspective in that scenario?
Well, I think you're right. That the number that I'm focusing on is one right now, because 45 of those cases we've had direct contact from the areas in China, and then another 14 of those cases were people who had contact with people. So we could account for almost all of the cases. So I think you hit the nail on the head where the number that I'm focusing on right now is one. The pessimistic point of view in that is we're just starting to test, and our the tests that have been sent still haven't resulted for a lot of people because this is all just happening. There's going to be people tested today, yesterday. We don't have these results yet. So that number is absolutely going to grow. But I still think, I think we're worried about the wrong virus here. There are about 41 million cases of the flu so far this year, resulting in about 500,000 hospitalizations and maybe 40,000 deaths. And so we're focusing on whether you look at 60 or whether you look at that number one, zero deaths in the U.S., and we are in the middle of a terrible flu season. So I think people are worried about the wrong bug.
Do those numbers again, Doctor. I've heard those, or numbers like those, and I'm not always certain if I'm hearing worldwide numbers or U.S. numbers. Are those U.S. numbers?
Currently, yes.
Are you kidding me? Those numbers you just gave me are for the United States?
U.S. flu season from the CDC. Yeah, I mean, it's no joke. We're in a terrible, terrible flu season. The limiting factor with any virus, and we'd have a lot of these conversations every year in the medical community about how can you accurately capture this? How can you, you can't test everybody. If you look at the symptoms for COVID-19, it's a fever, it's a cough, it's half of the U.S. population right now in February.
Yeah, right.
So it's really tricky. And then how do you attribute death to that bug? This sort of similar to the flu, it's actually pretty rare for an otherwise healthy person to just get the flu and die. Same thing as what we're seeing mostly from China with COVID-19. It's people who are elderly. They're getting hit harder. There's people with other comorbid conditions. How you attribute death to a virus has always been a little bit tricky. But the numbers that I'm seeing from the CDC, somewhere around 30 to 40 million cases of the flu this year, 500,000 people ending up in the hospital because of the flu, and maybe somewhere between 20 and 40,000 deaths.
Wow.
But there's a difference, isn't there, in that, and I'm not trying to be an alarmist at all, but one of the differences is the coronavirus is more deadly than the flu we're facing now, right?
That is the question I've had on my mind, too. Doctor, answer that after this. Our guest is Dr. Paul Ravenna, Northwestern Medicine family physician. After the president spoke last night, we thought, well, let's get a doctor to talk a little bit, not only about what the president said, but about what those medical professionals said. We're asking him questions now about the coronavirus in general. Steve had a question you may have had, and that is, Doctor, isn't this virus, though, more deadly than the common flu that we're experiencing?
Numbers that we have, we think the fatality rate is somewhere around 2%. I think one study that I was reading earlier was about 2.3%, somewhere in that range. Now, that number, I would imagine, is going to go down as we test more and more people. We also know that 80% of people who have the virus experience minimal to no symptoms. The 2.3% is definitely a higher number than influenza. Absolutely, that's a higher fatality rate than we're seeing. But I think it's a little bit too early to judge it.
So what you're saying is we don't know how many people have the coronavirus altogether, and once we know that bigger number, the death rate would be diluted.
Exactly. Our denominator is going to go way, way, way up.
You know, so all of this is maybe comforting, but I'm thinking again about that number you're thinking about, the one patient in California. There was a typhoid Mary, and Mary spread typhus to a population. There was one AIDS patient once. We didn't know it at the time, and we had an AIDS epidemic. If this person's been moving about California or wherever else for 2 weeks without any symptoms, I could see how that could spread to people that don't know they have it, to people that don't know they have it. Is there any realism in what I just described, Doctor?
Yeah, so that person for sure was spreading it because that's how viruses work. And so this is why we're going to get more cases, but we do not need to panic. So I do not think that this is the beginning of some, you know, zombie apocalypse movie where you have a doctor on, you know, on TV or on the radio who's saying, stay calm and go about your life as normal. We should be cautious. We should take precautions. I would argue these are the precautions that we should be taking no matter what. We are going to see more cases of this, but it is from what we know right now, potentially easier to spread, but overall less deadly than SARS and MERS were, a decade ago. And so we're not thinking about SARS and MERS. The world didn't end when that happened. People sort of are only thinking about them now that the next thing is coming out. We say, oh, remember when that happened? But I think it's a little bit early to panic.
We have hundreds of millions of dollars in the federal government coffers to fight Ebola. I mean, that, and again, that was terrifying. It was a different kind of animal, but I mean, it does remind me that we have, in a way, been through this before, but the market didn't fall 10% with SARS or Ebola.
Right.
It's kind of weird that we're getting this reaction now.
Precisely. Now, listen, I've never taken so much as an Econ 101 class. I spent way too much of my early 20s in a laboratory, so I'm not the person to ask about market trends here. But yeah, I think it's, we're, I'm I'm cautiously optimistic that we're overreacting a little bit, sort of as a community. And you know, there's a lot of misinformation about there. What we do know is about a 2% death rate worldwide. We haven't had any in the U.S. We've had 60 cases so far. That number is absolutely going to go up, but I do not believe that it is reason for panic. And the thing that I keep going back to is we're worried about the wrong bug so far.
Yeah, humor me, though, because the president at a press conference last night, not to talk about influenza, but to talk about coronavirus, are you satisfied with the administration's response? If a Democrat were in president right now, or a different Republican were president right now, do you think we would be in the very same place we're in right now?
I don't know that there's much we can do about this particular bug right now. I don't know what sort of response we need. The thing that we need is, at least at the most fundamental level, is better testing. So we need to be getting these testing kits more available to people, more available to primary care offices, to healthcare systems. Right now, they're really available through public health departments, which is fine. It's better than nothing. But
yeah.
We're in an information gathering stage. And the one frustration that I do have sort of on that level is it's difficult to gather that information if you can't test.
Well, is it possible that people in the United States or in the world have coronavirus and don't know it and are going to get over it and be better again and never have known they have coronavirus?
That's almost certain. I would say that's almost a guarantee. Yeah, 80% of people show minimal to no symptoms. So it is totally possible that your neighbor who had a cough and a fever for a couple of days and then fought it off and is going back to work and is still driving carpool and is still going about their business, that was coronavirus.
Listen to this. I don't know if there's any truth to this or not. Producer Elif got a text, and this is from somebody who said, here's some information you all should adhere to. Right, Elif? What is this?
Mm-hmm. It says, the new coronavirus may not show signs of infection for many days, so how can one know if he or she is infected? By the time they have fever and or cough and goes to the hospital, the lungs are usually 50% fibrosis and it's too late. Taiwan experts provide a simple self-check that we can do every morning. Take a deep breath and hold your breath for more than 10 seconds. If you complete it successfully without coughing, without discomfort, stuffiness, or tightness, there is no fibrosis in the lungs, basically indicating no infection. Advice from Japanese doctors treating COVID-19 coronavirus cases is everyone should ensure the mouth and throat are moist and never dry. Take a few sips of water every 15 minutes. The liquids will wash down any virus that gets into your mouth through the esophagus and into the stomach. And once the fluid is there, the acid of the stomach will kill the virus.
Okay, hold on.
That's basically it.
Okay, so two things there, doctor. Do you buy that one self-check is hold your breath for 10 seconds and does swallowing more often maybe wash it away?
I would say the simple answer to both of those questions is no.
It sounds pretty reasonable, but there's stuff like that out there right now, and now we're all becoming experts. So, but you're a physician. That all sounds new to you, huh?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not going to tell my people that they need to my patients that they need to be waking up every morning and holding their breath for 10 seconds. Nor would I say that is a reliable, sensitive, nor specific test for this virus or fibrosis in the lungs. I mean, that just sort of goes against how lungs work and how we can test for them. Listen, I understand that everyone is worried about this, and I get it. I totally understand it's a new thing. We hear death rates, we hear new cases all the time. I do understand why people are a little bit cautious about this, but you know, I always tell my patients the internet is for haters, and there's a lot of good information, but you really have to sift through a lot of bad to get there. And so I would not be advising them to swallow more or to hold their breath for 10 seconds.
Doctor, I read that if you can close your eyes and touch your nose with your finger, that will ward off the virus too. Is that...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And if you spin around three times when you enter the room, it's all this. lot of information out there. If you feel like you have symptoms, stay home. Have a lower threshold to actually call into work and contact your family doctor.
Yeah, and that's good advice because you may have the flu, not coronavirus. That's just good advice. I think this is like a hurricane that's coming, and we all get very wrapped up in the hurricane. You almost root for the hurricane, and it turns out to be a hurricane, but survivable and maybe not as bad as the people standing on the shores were making it look. And I think we're kind of a victim of the information cycles that we're in these days. We have more ways to say the same thing over and over again, and it is maybe not as bad as it feels. Mike on line one had this question. Mike, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Yes, John, I have a question. What I wonder about on the statistics of this is, what is the percentage of people 60 plus that have come down with the coronavirus? And then secondly, what is the death rate, the percentage of the group, of that 60 plus group that have come down with it?
Do you have the demos on that, doctor?
I don't in front of me, unfortunately.
Okay, I'm sorry, but I think you alluded to that earlier, that it's killing people who are older or are somehow immunocompromised, right?
Exactly. So people who are older have more likelihood to have a worse disease course, so more severe symptoms, requiring hospitalization.
All right, but could you comment on this, if I may? The next two texts on the sheet in front of me are, the doctor that died in China was not old. He was a younger man. John, the Chinese doctor who warned us, who discovered this virus, died. He was 29. Mm-hmm. The guy that was in charge of the hospital in Wuhan has also died. These are doctors who have maybe opportunity to safeguard themselves more than anybody, and they didn't survive it. What's your comment on that, doctor?
Yeah, absolutely. So listen, none of this is 100%. We know it's more likely for you to have severe symptoms if you're older, if you have other medical conditions, but that is not 100%. Nothing that we do is 100%. So absolutely. And more likelihood to protect him, I would probably argue that the people who were sort of on the front lines in China had no idea until it was too late.
Yeah, right. By the way, is there a test kit I can get as a civilian, just if I'm curious, doctor?
Not to my knowledge. To be honest with you, it's hard enough for us to test in the medical community.
Yeah. You've been very helpful today, doctor. I hope you don't mind if we call you again. Dr. Paul Ravenna is a Northwestern Medicine family physician. Thanks for your time this morning, and we will reach out again, sir.
Absolutely. It would be my pleasure.
Yeah, he's good at that, isn't he? I think it was it AIG? Boy, there's a lot of travel insurance companies out there. Elif and I are trying to remember the name of the insurance company. A friend of ours had no-fault insurance. That is, you can just cancel your trip at any time and they'll pay. You don't have to be sick. There doesn't have to be a pandemic. You can just say, I don't want to take the trip anymore. I want my money back. And the insurance pays for that. And there's several companies that sell that. There's something to look into. I wonder if so many people are going to exercise that the rates are going to go up. I mean, these insurance companies are paying out. John, on the Send trip with so this is from people who've traveled with Brendan and me. John, we were with you on the Send in Paris. My wife twisted her ankle. Travel insurance flew her home and me home, business class. I will never go without travel insurance. Jisuki's down the hall. You travel much, Ji?
I wish I could travel more. It's what I want to do more than anything.
Yeah. Are you nervous? I didn't ask the doctor this, but I was going to ask him, would you go to Tokyo or Italy right now?
One of my friends just got back from Tokyo.
And that was okay, huh?
She got a really great deal on her flight.
That's what Peter Greenberg said. He travels, and he goes, it's a good time to travel. You go to Italy. It's inexpensive right now.
It really is. I'm up. I'm game. Are you ready to go with me?
I am. What are you doing today, by the way?
Well, we're going to be talking about those gift cards that you have hidden away in your house that you need to use.
I know. What was the number on that? Like, a lot of people have ones they don't use, right?
Yeah, at least $167 per person in the U.S.,
I've got $60 in gift cards for a specific company I have to use by February 29th.
Oh, you're running out of time.